Hello, and welcome to episode 203 of Checkpoint Chat. My name is Alessandro Barbosa. I'm joined by Matthew Figuera.
By me and special guest behind you, who will not be contributing. I can also do this. Look at this. I'm just working hard on a Saturday. You hate to see
super, it. Super, super hard. Super, super hard. And we share an office, so it is what it is.
All your listeners, Sean is behind Alessandro.
Just chilling.
What is this big reveal?
Third member of the cast finally, 203 episodes in. Too bad. Imagine. Lupin never made the cut. He was close, though.
Checkpoint
Lenska
cats.
Didn't want to be involved.
No.
You know, that's the right decision, I think.
I think I've mentioned this a few times before, but I've said to her, like, hey, you've played this game. You're very welcome to come talk about it if you want. She's like, nah.
Yeah. I think we've had this discussion. She's like, I don't know how you guys talk so easily and freely. It's like, we just kind of do.
I don't know. We just play. But it's funny because we actually had this conversation this week. I don't know how we got to it, but it was essentially the thing of when I play a game, things are so obvious to me. And when she plays a game, it's less obvious. Like, I was telling her, when I watch her play a game, it's very obvious to me that they're saying you should go, you know, not explicitly telling you, but saying, like, you should go this way. Mm-hmm. She's like, like, which way should I go? And then when I pointed out, she's like, how did you know? I'm like, I've just played enough games that I just know.
It's an actual concept that we learned about when I was studying game design called player affordances. Like, you design a game with a certain subset, with an idea in mind of knowledge that players just have. Like, nowadays, you could dilute that down to, like, players generally know how a third-person camera works. Like, you can still tell them in the game, but you are designing the game around them being able to move forward and the camera independently of one another. That's like an affordance.
Yeah.
And again, like you say, when Shani played Breath of the Wild, that was the thing she struggled with. It was like, how are you controlling these two things at once? It's very confusing. And I'm like, the game like kind of doesn't work if you don't, like if you can't, like it's very difficult. So
yeah, it is funny though how it's so normal. Like I remember the original PS1 never had thumbsticks. And we played.
Oh yeah, the very first one. Yeah, it only came out later.
We had the OG PS, the OG controller. Yeah, just the D-pad,
non-DualShock.
And then I think we borrowed a copy of what is the there was one game. It was like the first game to take advantage of it. It was like Monkey Super.
It was Ape Escape, wasn't it?
Ape Escape. I tried playing that and I was like, this game does not work. I can't see where I'm going. And obviously as a kid, I had no idea that there was a different version of the controller that would let you move the camera.
I thought Ape Escape only worked with the DualShock. Like
you can launch the game and you can get into it and you can start playing it. But
I was
baffled.
It's
like, this
game is literally like a broken game because you're using a different controller. That is crazy.
Super, super baffling to young me going, why? I can only look forward. My guy's only taking this way. This is a garbage game. Many years later, I was like, oh.
I mean, I was the same because I played a lot of Crash Bandicoot on PlayStation 1. Crash Team Racing, Crash Bandicoot. And when, you know, things started transitioning over to thumbstick, I'm like, this is so inaccurate. This is like, I can't play like this. And like, for a long time, games supported both. They were like, cool, you can do whichever. But eventually they started moving over being like, no, the D-pad on our other buttons. They're not movement buttons. And I was like, I can't play video games anymore.
I remember fighting games and even platformers. Celeste is one that I bounce between the D-pad and the thumbsticks.
That is a D-pad game through and through. I do not know how anyone plays that without a D-pad.
Plays it.
Because you need such accurate cardinal, you need like a diagonal. And on a thumbstick, that's just not like, you'll think you're doing diagonal and then Celeste will just be like, Madeline will just be like,
she goes backwards, great. Like, damn.
You're like, this is awesome. What was I doing?
The wrong way, my bad. Yeah, but it's amazing how... Sorry, no, go for
no,
it.
No, I think the other inflection point for this sort of stuff was when games moved to like first-person cameras for shooting.
Oh, yes.
Because they used to be very different. They used to be like you went forward and turned around on the same stick. And then I can't remember which game was the first to introduce the idea of like looking on the right stick. And I remember like there was a tweet a while back where someone like linked to a review of that game at the time. And the review just like lambasted like the control scheme. Like, this is such a weird control scheme. It's never going to catch on. And
like, oh my
that's
God.
How all shooters work now. But I remember that because I played a game on the original Xbox called James Bond Nightfire. It was one of, they were making so many James Bonds then. I think it was like after GoldenEye because it had a really big multiplayer component and was really fun. And the default control scheme there was that weird shooting one. And I remember always having to change it to go back to where I turned with my left stick because I was like, I can't play like this. This is like absolute dog shit to try this and play is, like this.
We're digging into childhood trauma slash revelations here. Because so did you ever play Medal of Honor on PlayStation 1? Because that was the same
very
thing of
briefly, yeah.
You, I think you strafed with like the shoulder buttons.
Yeah. Oh yes.
So yeah, you could you turn left and right and move forward and back with a D-pad. And then, but not in that aiming, you'd have to hold the button to bring up, or not to bring up the cross. I think it was always there, but you had to push a button to then you know have the freedom to aim.
Yeah, because then you were stationary and you were just aiming. Like, yeah, I remember that.
So that felt weird, you know, having to making the transition from that. But you know what is the opposite of that? Learning how to play a first-person shooter with a keyboard and mouse. Like adding a mouse to the equation. Because initially, I played first-person shooters just keyboard and it was just moving up, down. Yeah, exactly. I'm an old gamer, remember.
Oh, I guess Doom functioned like that because there was no vertical axis. So.
But playing with the mouse wasn't always the obvious thing.
Yeah.
Until one day I played Quake 1 using the mouse and I was like,
this is transformative. Oh,
I can look up and down. I can't believe
that. So you're always shooting in one like axis of it. If someone jumped, so you're like, well,
you
I'm
legitimately
fucked.
Had to use, I think it was like page up or page down to aim up or down.
Oh, get out of here.
I promise
so
you.
So you're using
a word of a
WASD and then
yeah, you
what,
had two
the arrow
hands
keys,
on the keyboard.
And then page up and page down.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds horrible.
I'm telling you. It was horrible. That's why I was like, whoa, this mouse. The power I have with this small thing.
I think I learned how to play first-person shooters on PC before I did console. And that's probably why I struggled with like adapting to the controller. Because like, you know, the earliest shooter I can remember playing is probably CS. And that was always with a mouse.
CS, I mean, you needed a mouse, yeah.
Yeah. Could you imagine playing that with just a keyboard? Jesus Christ. so yeah, that always felt natural to me because I was like, well, the mouse is where I'm looking. It's like,
yeah,
like immediately. But I do know that the original Doom never had a Y-axis for shooting, so you just had to look in that direction, and if you shot and there was an enemy above you, you shot at that enemy.
Yeah, but I think that's why when... So I played that, played Wolfenstein 3D. So when I moved to Quake, I was like...
Yeah, Quake was a very vertical game.
I have to use.
especially the online. My God, could you imagine playing that? I'm like trying to think of
Young me was not playing online. That is not even a thought of mine.
You're like, can I rack up R1,000 on the telephone to play video games online?
I don't even know if we had dial-up at that stage. Good Lord.
Could you imagine the ping on dial-up? Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. Oh, well, people did it. Don't know how they did, but people did it.
Yeah, people played. I guess that was where LANs came into effect.
Yeah.
Like, go to an internet cafe. I mean, that's where I played all my CS. I didn't have a PC. I just went to internet cafes for hours at a time and played.
Oh, whatever, man.
Me and another guy were playing two-person CS for hours. Like, just 1v1ing each other in, like, rats or whatever, you know. Like, literally running around for 10 minutes, not finding each other, seeing one person... Then you like run around for 10 minutes again.
Yeah.
Feel good.
Whatever, man. In my day, we used to have to play to LAN. And then even again, this is another revelation or evolution. Not every game had bots.
Oh, true that. Oh, CS had bots, yeah, I guess.
Yeah, but CS was like at a later... You either had to add bots or, I don't know, they didn't always have bots. So
yeah, we always had to ask the admin at the cafe lounge to like add bots. We had no idea how to do it.
No, but I'm talking, I'd go home and not be able to play CS because I had no bots until on a day it's like, oh, you can add bots. Like, whoa, I can play this game by myself. Best day ever.
Which was it? I remember there was also one Counter-Strike that came out early 2000s that like it boasted a campaign, but the campaign was literally just you running through every map playing a game of like disarm or rescue the hostages.
No, there was a CS with an actual, with proper story missions with different environments. It was called...
Was it Zero?
Yeah, it was... It was something like, it was a whole separate version of CS.
Yeah, I think it was Counter-Strike
Zero. The weapons sounded so cool. I remember going like, wow, it's the same weapons. They sound different though.
Wow, it's the evolution. Bit rates on the sound sample is so much higher.
They just sounded different. Yeah.
I remember me taking like literal weeks to download that game because we only had... Still at that time, I think we didn't have ADSL, but my mom had a 3G dongle that she got from work. So I was using that to try and download what was actually just like 1-point-something gigabytes, but it took days. Like,
you want to talk about what were you downloading?
Counter-Strike. Yeah, it was off Steam. Yeah. You want to talk, I don't think we had local caching at the time, so it was just like super slow.
Yeah, you want to talk about taking forever to download. Imagine waking up one Christmas and unwrapping Half-Life 2. And being so excited to play the sequel to one of the games you love playing growing up, only to put it in. It's like, hey man, where's your internet connection?
You're
like, okay, cool. I'm going to dial up. Don't answer the phone.
For at least 5 days.
Yeah, I can't remember how long it took, but I got on Christmas and we had people over for Christmas every day. So I just remember running back and forth to my PC going, is it done yet? Is it done yet? No, it's not. I think I only got to play on Boxing Day, but like the evening. Don't know what our bill was. Parents never said, but I'm sure it must have cost some moolah.
A fortune. Yeah, they were like, wow, never buying a PC game for this man ever again.
Steam. Good Lord. Look at Steam today.
That was wasn't Half-Life 2 the first game that required Steam?
I think it was the first, yeah.
Yeah. I remember, well, I don't remember it at the time, but I know now that there was a huge uproar like over that requirement. So, yeah.
The worst. Well, here we are. Modern day gaming. Lands are dead.
Lands are dead, yeah. Why go to lands and just play the games online, which is real fucking strange. But
why land today when I can just sit comfortably at home and access the entire world or my region? I mean, come on. Yeah, it's a good time.
It's Checkpoint Chat. We talk about good times of video games and the bad times.
And the... Oh, wow. What a segue.
How to pivot and... So we are officially in absolute silly season now with video games. There are just games left, right, and center coming out. There's a bunch of stuff that we're playing that we can't talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's one embargo on Monday. There's another one on Thursday. And I haven't played enough of the game for the one on Monday to talk about it now and delay the episode. So we're just going to do it next week. Also, I can't say what game it is because the social media embargo lifts 2 hours before the review embargo. So that's stupid.
Makes no sense.
Yeah. But
we're going to talk about the game you played shortly. But that review embargo blows my mind because the embargo was like midday the day the game came out.
So last week
makes no sense to me.
I think last week I said I was busy playing Scorn for review.
I don't know if you said you were playing it. I don't know if you could say you're playing it, but yes, you were playing.
I was playing Scorn. I got it quite a while ago and like the video is just stuttering.
Why is it stuttering?
Maybe play it through VLC or something.
Good lord. Apologies.
So I got the game quite a while ago. I put in a draft this Monday. I thought the embargo was like the next day. Turns out it was halfway through release day, which should tell you a lot about what you need to know about Scorn.
Wow.
This game is it's like an adventure puzzle game that is set in a world that is heavily inspired by the likes of H.R. Giger. So if you've ever watched Alien or Prometheus, these sort of like biomechanical, fleshy grossness that those movies have just ratcheted up to like 100, because that is mostly what Scorn is. It's like every mechanism in there is like metal fused into like
flesh,
organic matter. Yeah. Machines like work off the like blood and flesh of other beings. And like, it's weird. Like, if you're watching the video, you see like the switch is activated by you putting your fingers in this weird like finger glove flesh thing. It's all very off-putting, but like intentionally so. Like, it's not done in a way that is meant to be like, it's meant to be disgusting and gross and violent. And in that regard, it kind of succeeds. I think it adapts the source material or the inspirations at least very well. And I think it's biomes, because each act takes place in like a very distinct, like closed off area. I think each of those is like quite varied and visually distinct and has its own sort of like machinations and machines that move all in tune with one another. They feel like solving puzzles in this game, they're twofold. So each act is like one larger puzzle where you're moving things from like one end of the space to the other, or solving smaller puzzles to open up doors that give you access to new areas. And each of the bigger areas feels like a real Rube Goldberg machine. Like, it just all clicks in, like sort of like, you know the game Mousetrap, the board game, right? Yeah. Like when you're building everything and then when you set it off and you see everything interconnect and like going off, that's sort of how the puzzles work in a very slow manner. You're seeing it slowly like interconnect, which is pretty neat. I think that part of it is pretty cool. And even though the ways you're solving the puzzles are pretty rudimentary, the ways that they pay off, I think, are pretty rad. The puzzles themselves, especially the smaller ones, they're sort of like mini games. So you'll go to a switchboard, for instance, and suddenly now, like, to activate the switch, it's like a little maze game, or it's one of those games where like you need to rotate all of the circles into a specific direction, but as you rotate one, the other two rotate as well. So you've got to like figure out the correct order to rotate them. It's sort of, and there's one other puzzle, which is like that board game Traffic Jam, where you've got to move things. Things can only move like up or down or left and right, and there's only a specific number of spaces. So you've got to move things so that you can get one thing from the one end to the other end. So it's like a spatial awareness thing. So it's all like formats of puzzles that you've played before. Like, you see them and you're like, cool, I know exactly how this works. It's just looks grosser. You know what I mean? I think I paused the game here. I don't know what was going on. So
I was like, what happened?
Yeah. So I don't really think those puzzles were that great, because they were immediately familiar, and then they were repeated a bunch of times very quickly in succession. Like, if you got to the rotating circle ones, for example, the next two or three doors that you needed to open all were just that puzzle again, just like a slightly harder version. So it just got super annoying very, very quickly. And for a game where like puzzles are pretty much 50% of what you do, if the smaller ones are annoying to do, I think it's a bit of a failure on that front to actually like engage the player like on a challenging like cranial level. So
yeah,
didn't enjoy that. I think the thing I super, 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 super did not enjoy, I cannot emphasize enough how much I did not like this part, was combat. Like, it is bad. Yeah. Like, just straight up terrible. So I wasn't aware, but I went back and looked because I was curious. But this game was marketed as not having a lot of combat. Like, they were straight up saying, this is not a shooter. That is a lie.
Yeah.
I will tell you that right now, that is not true. Because from probably the end of Act 2 up until all the way to 5, you are consistently fighting enemies.
Oh, really?
To the point where sure. you cannot avoid them. So there are a lot of instances where you will see an enemy in a larger room at a distance and you're like, cool, if I just kite them here, I can get around them, no problem. Mm-hmm. You know, standard horror stuff, you want to actually avoid enemies more often than you want to engage them, just like a actually Resident Evil. Yeah. But then there are times where enemies will just spawn in hallways where there is no other way to go. Like, you need to go this way. And you will like walk towards this hallway and one will just fucking appear there. And most of the enemies are all ranged enemies. And for a very long time in the game, you do not have a ranged weapon. You have a weapon that shoots out like a little alien mouth. Look, that's what it looks like. But it maybe does a meter of damage in front of you. On top of that, the weapon, that weapon specifically, the first one, takes, I think, 4 or 5 shots to kill the base enemies, or like 2 yeah. shots to kill very small ones, 4 or 5 to kill ones that you encounter quite frequently. And you have to wait for like a seconds long cooldown, maybe, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 seconds between every 2 shots. So it is just stupid. Painful. It's honestly, yeah. you're in this tight hallway. This guy will kill you very, very easily. He's doing range shots. You have to get right up close to him, hit him twice, then run around a circle while you're like waiting for this cooldown to expire. You also can't see the cooldown because the UI only surfaces when you aim. But when you aim, you can hardly move. So like, if I aim to check how much cooldown I've got on this weapon, I'll get hit. So if I don't have enough, so I've just got to like remember, like try and figure out how long I need to wait before I can maybe take another 2 shots, then do this whole rigmarole again. That's for one enemy. Then you start getting rooms where there are like 3, 4, 5 of these guys at once. And you're like, well, I've got to avoid them. There's no way I can kill them. There's just no way. I'll just die.
You just have to fight them.
So what it led to was a lot of times me just dying, which fine, game's hard, cool. But that surfaced the whole other issue I had, which is how aggressive the checkpointing is. So the checkpointing, I could tell later on in the game, the checkpoints were saving checkpoints after key points in a puzzle, but not all key points. So for example, at the beginning of Act 3, you have to run around a small area and find an upgrade for this like item that you have that like unlocks doors. And every time you upgrade it, you can unlock different types of doors. So I'd have to get that. I'd have to go unlock a door, kill an enemy, continue, hit a switch to rotate a fan, come back, more enemies have spawned, kill those enemies, go back. If I died at any point there, started me at the start of the act where I'd have to get the key thing.
Good Lord.
And that I cannot tell you how many times that happened. Like, worst. I was just, at this point, I'm like, I've played about 1.5 hours of the same fucking section over and over and over again. And every time I try it, it's like almost 15, 20 minutes of just trying, like infuriating. Then you only get one autosave spot. So if the game decides to autosave and you are one hit away from death, you've just got to fucking deal with it. Like, the only other way you can get avoided is restarting the act. And each act is about 1.5 hours long. So if you are right at the end and you checkpoint and you are now in front of a hallway where an enemy is spawning, or there's a bunch of enemies that you're struggling to avoid because, hey, the smaller ones have this ridiculous range and it's almost impossible to dodge their shots at the movement speed you have. Good luck. Like, you gotta get lucky. Like, there were numerous times where I was running past enemies, hoping to God that I'd like not clip through them, but they would move in a different way and I'd just get past them, because that's the only method of progression I had. There was nothing more I could do other than lose 1 hour of progress. And then if you actually encounter a bug, which happened to me, I clipped through an enemy as I killed him, it auto-saved, I was stuck. I reloaded that save, was stuck, could not move. Lost 1.5 hours of progress because I had to restart the entire act. Fuck that. Come on.
The worst, yeah.
Like, how? If you're going to have a save system that restrictive, you better be super certain that something like that can't happen. Because losing an hour and a half of progress in a game is not acceptable. It in today's standards, it's just not. It's infuriating as well when a game is 6 hours long and it has the ability to throw 25% of that out of the window just because I clipped into an enemy.
But you can't save manually either.
You can't. Like, impossible. No. You have no manual save. So you are at the whims of this autosave, completely.
Ish.
And the only saves you can reload are last checkpoint or the beginning of each act completed. I had to walk away from this game multiple times. Shani can attest to me sitting here and literally just swearing, just being like, fuck this. I played Elden Ring for 100 hours this year. FromSoft games are frustrating and their bosses are frustrating. And there are times that I was like, I need to just chill out with this boss. But there is a difference there because they are frustrating because I'm not understanding something. The game is not intentionally unfair.
Yeah, it's never the game being unfair.
Scorn is unfair. Scorn feels completely unbalanced when it comes to its combat. It feels like it requires a certain finesse from you that the game doesn't afford you through its mechanics. On top of that, there's only 4 weapons in the game. I somehow only got 3. So it's entirely possible for you to miss a weapon and just have a harder time of it. I can definitely see that they have designed the game around this because there is one boss in the game and it's right at the end. And he is definitely, definitely designed for you to only kill him with the first starting weapon. I could see that. But I could also not imagine how nightmarish that would be. Because that would probably make me quit the game. I'd be like, I'm done. Forget this shit. There's a good chance that a lot of the struggles I had, in Act 3, Act 4, were because the game was sort of balanced for me, balanced around the idea of having 2 weapons, which the second one I ended up finding out is a rifle, which gives me a lot more range in my attacks, which... fucking hell yes, that would have helped tons and it might have changed my entire experience with the game. But at the same time, if that's the case, your combat can't be balanced one way or the other. It has to manage both.
And
I just think it's a bad time. Like, listen, there are a bunch of other reviews out there that there's some that gave this game an 8 to 7, whatever. I totally get that. They probably had a very different experience with the game. I spoke to people at GameSpot who had different experiences with the game. That is what a game review is, but I can only talk about what I played. And at the end of the day, a game review is, I played a game, here's how it made me feel. And this game made me feel tons of frustration to the point where I just never want to see
that's
it again.
That's what the developers want at the success.
maybe. Who knows?
Great success.
I really do not like it, and I do not think I will be the only person who plays it and finds the same sort of flaws in it. Eurogamer was quite similar to my review, which was interesting to read. They had issues with the checkpointing and lost progress on save, so it's definitely not... And I looked through the patch notes because we were given the patch notes for the day one patch, and I had to make sure that the issue I ran into my issue was not there. So... whatever, man.
Well, despite your grievances, the fact that it's a 6-hour game, I'm still kind of curious to just at least try it out.
I don't dissuade you from giving it a go.
You might
end up enjoying it. There was not enough there. The setting and the puzzles were not good enough that I was like, cool, I can overlook this combat. It was like the puzzles are already boring. And now this combat is straight up broken.
Even worse.
Yeah. So.
Well, it's on Game Pass. So
it's on Game Pass. I mean, it's worth a look if you're really, really keen. The aesthetic is really nice. I think it adapts to super well.
And gross.
It's real fucking gross. It's not scary. It's billed as a horror. I do not recall one moment where I was tense. it doesn't really have much shock value. Like after the first hour or so, you're like, okay, cool. Yeah, okay. Every machine in here is mangling my hands. Great. Yeah. Whenever I press a button and I put my hand into some machine, I'm just going to expect to get like fucking destroyed a little bit and bloodied, and then I carry on. So it kind of like loses that effect pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's weird. And the atmosphere is strange. And it looks pretty good. I think it looks quite nice. I really do not like the sound the guns make when they need to reload. It sounds like a wet, squishy flesh noise, and I do not like it. I'm not a fan at all.
I think it's probably one of the strengths of the game, though. I'm sure its sound design is...
Sound design's good. Pretty good. Yeah, it's pretty good.
So imagine being that sound team, like the brief.
Yeah, I would actually love like a behind-the-scenes video of how they did it, because it's always weird, like, what was it? I think it was Mortal Kombat. They said like some of the sounds for the fatalities, they had like pieces of meat in a bucket that they were hitting with like a hammer to make that squishy.
I can't remember what game or movie it is, but somebody was like, yep, the sound of a snapping celery in half is pretty much the same sound as a neck snapping in half. Like,
oh, I have heard that. Yes. Yeah. Foley teams at sound teams, they found the most incredible ways to like mimic sounds like on the cheap. It's really, really
cool. So next time you're eating some cereal, just snap that bad boy in half and go, oh.
Fatality.
That's what it sounds like. So that's Scorn.
That's Scorn. Yeah, it's on Game Pass. I don't know. I'd be curious to hear if other people have thoughts on it. If you play it and you find it a very different experience. Yeah.
When we're out of this thick, dense review season, Jesus. We are.
Yeah, it's now, and it's not slowing down anytime soon. I think God of War is like the last one where it kind of like slows down after that. There's stuff in December. There's like Need for Speed in December as well now. There's so much stuff. Oh, anyway.
Cool. Should we talk about the Street Fighter 6 beta quickly?
Sure. Yeah. I can chat a little bit about that. Did you actually play any games?
So I was so bleak with this because we got access that Thursday or Friday.
Yeah.
So I'd queued my Street Fighter to download. And then I think I had such a busy weekend last weekend, but only on Sunday evening I actually sat down, to jump into it, only to find that, that is the wrong scene. My bad.
Sunday evening. Yeah, Sunday evening, wasn't it?
Only to find that so it went on till like Monday morning, but on Sunday evening, my game just inexplicably hadn't finished downloading. I booted up my PlayStation. What is up with this player? Sorry.
Yeah, the Windows player is garbage.
No, but I've never had an issue with it. But now all of a sudden today, it's like, no, you cannot fuse this. So long story short, I never got to play on Sunday evening because my game just wasn't downloaded. Oh, look at that skin. It's the best.
It's fantastic. The character created in this game is absolutely ridiculous.
It's great. Yeah,
it's great.
So I woke up on Monday morning to catch the last hour because it ended at like 9 a.m. or something. So I played from about 8. So I didn't get too much time with it, but I did get a handful of games in. Mm-hmm. I watched more games than I played because I'm bad at Street Fighter. So I was more interested in seeing how other people play the game. And visually, this game is the best.
It's fantastic.
I absolutely love the style they've gone for. You'll see now, if you're watching the video feed, just the color splashes when landing, like, you'll probably have a better understanding of the...
I totally forgot what those moves are called, but I know what you're talking
systems,
about.
The systems, yeah. But just the style of this game, it's so good.
Whoa, why is it so fast?
No, it's catching up to them. So if you're watching the video feed, I'm busy spectating a game. For some reason, it doesn't just put me where the fight started. It speeds up all the footage until I get to the live moment.
I love these. So I played a bunch with... Jeff and Darren, and we were bouncing between playing and spectating, and I think the spectating mode is just so good. Like, I don't know if this is a standard in fighting games, but the idea of you've got the hit register, you can see exactly how much damage attacks are doing, the attack types, the combo damage. It's like you are getting to spectate, but you're also learning. You've got all these tools to learn as you're watching. So that's pretty cool. I do think, so you can see there that if you're watching the video feed, you've got these like little arcade cabinets in the, what's it called? The Battle Hub, I think it's called.
Yeah, it's like just a hub. Yeah.
And you essentially sit down at one side or the other, and you can basically say, well, I'm spectating, but I'll play next. Mm. I like that system because it's like a very arcade-like system.
It's very reminiscent of like original Street Fighter where that's how you played the game. You'd put your 50-cent piece on the arcade machine and join the queue.
Yes, exactly. I do wish it was a bit more seamless though. So like when Jeff, Darren and I were playing, like for example, Jeff would be spectating and then I would lose. And the idea we all had in our head is, oh, it's just going to pop now Jeff straight into the queue. It's like keeping us in a rotating roster. And apparently that's how Street Fighter V worked. It was like you just had this round robin thing. But here, at least in the beta, you have to pop back to the battle hub, press that you want to play, then it loads you back in, which is a bit like...
Okay, so it's a bit unintuitive.
It should be a bit smoother. Yeah, it definitely should be a bit smoother. But that could be just a beta thing. They could be fixing that. If I had to give one thing of feedback, it would definitely be that. Just to, you know, I want a lot of people to come around a cabinet and then they're all within like a round robin hopper and it just pops people in.
And even that thing of just winner keeps, you know,
exactly
keeps playing.
Winner stays on top. That would be great. Other than that, I think it's very good. I don't have enough experience with fighting games to say whether or not a netcode is good, but I could see the ping counter there and I didn't really feel much, you know, I never felt it at massive disadvantage. And when I was playing with Jeff and Darren, the ping was like 30. So it's definitely connecting us directly. So that was pretty cool.
I had one experience. I can actually just scrub through the footage where I think I fought a Ryu. It's just over. Yeah, this is the only one time I fought where, you know, when there's a bit of a delay.
Though. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, that ping is 500. It's super slow.
Yeah, you can actually tell that the match almost looks slowed down. Yeah, that's weird.
You know, it gave me time to react. It was great. I still lost horribly.
So I'm trying to remember now the mechanics because I mean, both of us didn't really play Street Fighter V much.
No.
But I know Street Fighter V had stuff like V triggers and a bunch of different things to think about. This one has got 2 meters. So you've got your super meter at the bottom. And I've totally forgotten what the one underneath your health is.
Yeah, there's one on top there.
Yeah, so that the one underneath your health judges like super attacks, so like Hadoukens, Shoryukens, stuff like that. And also certain like blocks. And then your super meter is like, you know, your super attacks or augmenting those attacks with more damage. To me, initially, it seemed complicated, but I think the meter underneath your health recharges so much while you're attacking that it's sort of like unless all you're doing is firing off Hadoukens and doing nothing else, like you're probably not going to struggle with that. I think the strategy comes in attacks that take more than one pip of that at a time. Like you've got to be very conservative with those.
Mm.
I do really like the, don't remember the name, but the real graffiti looking attacks can be used to like break out of a combo and they're pretty easy to pull off, which feels pretty nice. Oh, that reminds me. Did you play with modern or classic controls?
I did not know I could choose. I probably had modern.
It hit you on modern for the first time. Yeah, it defaults you to modern. So the modern controls are neat because they are like your auto combo things. So they're great for newcomers. So you can hold R2 and hit square like 3 times and it will do a combo where it's like punch, super attack, super, super attack, you know, instead of you doing all the quarter circles required for that very quickly. I know Jeff struggled with the modern controls because he's like, this is so counter to what he's used to. But Darren was using them and I started using them and I was like, this is way easier for me to understand while I think about like what I'm trying to like learn is like when to block exactly, and when to do attacks, not the execution. So as always, classic controls always give you more flexibility and someone who's better at classic will always beat someone who's good at modern controls. But I think if you just want to have fun and you're not playing this like super seriously, Modern controls are fucking great. So,
Yeah.
I had a great time with this game.
Sad I didn't put more time into it, but just the small taste I had, I think it'll be a fun time. Like, I like this hub.
I think this game's going to be a banger. I have not been this into a fighting game, I think, ever. I played with Jeff and Darren, and then I played alone. Like, I was just playing like an hour or two, just like, want to play, and I was getting my ass handed to me online, and that's the point, is just like learn.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's a good time. I really like it. I'm still figuring out who I like to play as, but I like, who's the cover character? He's the one you start off with.
Is it Luke?
Luke. Yeah, Luke. I quite like him. Yeah.
The beta never had stretch your arm guy.
It didn't. Yeah, it had what? Ken, Ryu, Luke, Jamie, Juri, Guile.
Yeah, there were 8 characters. Oh, Guile is so small.
Your Guile's hair is super weird again. Like, I just don't understand what's going on there.
Guile's got too many muscles. Chun-Li. Chun-Li was there as well. Yeah.
Ken looks like a hobo, and Jeff says that's for story reasons, apparently. Couldn't tell you.
This game's going to have a story, which I'm very keen to see.
Yeah, there's so much. Like, the story mode in this game, like, super entices me. Did you see that there were little other arcade cabinets in the hub where you could play, like, classic Capcom games?
I actually didn't.
Yeah, there were, like, 2D Capcom games.
I think
games
I saw, but I was more interested in capitalizing.
There was even, like, limited. Street Fighter 2 Turbo there. Like, you could just play that there.
That's cool.
It's pretty sick.
Oh, damn.
And there were a lot of parts of that hub that were disabled as part of the beta, so it's going to be even more expansive. So, yeah, I like it. I like that when you run around, it's like this player is on a winning streak, so you can like go to their cabinets and spectate or challenge them. Yeah, it's neat.
Well, your winning streak ends now, and then you lose. Like, oh, damn.
That's a good time. I thoroughly enjoyed my time with the beta. I hope they host more in the lead up to the release.
I think so, because the game's coming out next year, but I mean,
they haven't said when.
They haven't said when. I still think there'll be a couple.
There's a lot of speculation that it'll be before the end of March, you know, like end of fiscal year. That kind of makes sense to me, especially if they're hosting a beta this robust now, like before March next year.
Launch can't be that far. Yo,
let's go February 2023. Let's fucking go. We're going to be playing soon. We already know that we're going to do another chili eating challenge with Jeff. Yeah. And we will die.
We will all die.
Actually die. Yeah.
Good Lord.
Good time.
Cool. That's Street Fighter 6.
Street Fighter. Now beta. To another online experience. If you can call it that.
This upsets me
Overwatch 2. Which I have not. Can I tell you? I'm actually super keen to download this and play with you. Like, I have not played Overwatch in years.
Hot minutes.
Years. But even with all the issues, I'm like, I could play a game with Matty while he's streaming. That sounds like fun. Matty's like, don't do it to yourself.
No, look, so it's sad because Overwatch 2 is actually, it's really good. Okay, like if we can sit and discuss how it's, we don't know why it's called a sequel, because, you know, it feels like it's really just a significant patch or a very big game overhaul update, some which is not uncommon in online games. You know, some games reinvent themselves, change things.
I mean, we're talking about slapping, CSGO not so long ago, so
yeah. So calling this a sequel is just like a huge question mark. But, you know, semantics aside, it's good. Like, I loved Overwatch 1 when it came out. I played it for, you know, probably most of the first year. I put a lot of time into the game. And then inexplicably, I don't know why, I just fell off. But jumping back into the sequel now, it's been really fun and it's been fun seeing a lot of my friends come back as well. People I haven't played games with for a long time, because the game Overwatch 2 is free to play. Mm-hmm. You're like, yeah, let's just jump in, play some games. But yeah, I think, like I touched on when I spoke about it last week, one of the more significant changes is that it's no longer a 6v6 game. They've dropped a tank from the team composition, so it's 5v5, and just removing that tank changes the whole game in a pretty significant way, because it's less time players just chipping away at a shield, you know, or a tank who just refuses to die because they're being healed. The dynamic has shifted in that the tank has a pretty important role. you know, and I'm, you know, helping the team push, but trying not to die, being more, I suppose, clinical with their movement and their, you know, how, when they choose to push, when they choose to poke or fall back, that sort of thing. And it, the game just feel more, I guess, frantic as a result, or I don't know, more, maybe frantic is not the right word, but
it looks more engaging, I guess.
Yeah, maybe not that Overwatch 1 was not engaging, like, don't get me wrong, but it feels like there's just the stakes are higher. Okay. Which is really nice. Like, it feels good. And yeah, this is all complemented by the three new heroes. We've got... so, Brigitte's not new, but I never played her in Overwatch 1. She's good fun. She's actually a healer / tank.
I remember her looking very different in 1.
I think, maybe, yeah, maybe Overwatch 2, they've had some visual tweaks and overhauls. But yeah, there's three new characters, a tank, healer, and a fence. So, we've got Sojourn, who... If you've not watched, she's the one who has the rapid fire laser gun, if I can call it that, which charges up and gives you the option to fire off like a beam shot, very reminiscent of a rail gun from Quake.
Cool.
It is good fun. Yeah, super cool. I always get her name mixed up. It's Kimiko or Kiriko, the new healer. She's also real cool. And then you've got Junko Queen, the new tank.
People seem to love Junko Queen. Yeah, I've seen a lot.
Really cool. So we've got these new characters, and there've been some overhauls in some of the older characters. The game feels good.
Okay.
Like, it genuinely feels really good. You can see now, if you're watching the footage, we're playing a new game mode where you're pushing a robot back and forth across the map. So there's a new game mode as well. The only problem, though, is that the servers have been actual garbage. Like, I spoke about it last week. Everyone knows if you tried playing this game on launch, you just couldn't. You could, but you'd have to wait a long time. Like, my bitter experience was I queued for an hour watching my friends play because they managed to get in earlier. I joined a deathmatch when I got in just to wait for their game to finish, and then I got kicked out and promptly put back to the beginning of the queue.
That fucking sucks. Which was
the worst.
That sucks so much.
So that problem's gone, though, thankfully, because, you know, you can launch the game and the servers aren't nearly as busy, or they've done something that you just get into the main menu instantly.
Yeah.
Very cool. Except this week, for some reason, the one evening I played, the servers were... It was a different problem that you could get into the game, but when you try to find a match, it's like, cool, game found. Error, like server error, queue again. You sat and you queued and you queued and you queued. And then when you eventually got into game, it was just unplayable.
It was all laggy and stuff. Hey?
All laggy. And it wasn't just me, because my initial thought was, oh, it's just my ISP having a problem, or South African internet just shitting the bed. Until you have people in the all chat going like, hey, are you guys lagging as well?
So the whole thing Reddit, was just dying.
Everyone's bitching about, oh, the servers are down, competitive's down. And it's upsetting because this is Blizzard. Like, I think I feel particularly, I almost feel offended, because I'm like, I championed Blizzard so hard, you know, in those heydays when Overwatch was announced and it launched, and then Hearthstone was big, StarCraft 2 was still big, Heroes of the Storm still had a huge player base. Like, Blizzard was at its peak for me there. It was just doing magical things. And then I don't know what happened. It just feels like Blizzard isn't what they used to be. And I keep trying to home on this point on, I know they're different teams, but Blizzard is the studio who runs World of Warcraft.
Yeah.
In fact, like 99% of the games are just strictly online experiences. I mean, Hearthstone, Warcraft, StarCraft, all of these things. But then how do you botch a launch this badly? Like, I get it. Maybe you didn't expect such a response. Maybe you were DDoS twice. I don't know, but it just feels very unlike them to get something so wrong. Like, Blizzard's one of the studios you look at and you go, yeah, they do really good quality. Like, Blizzard's a peak studio. So I don't know. The only way I could explain is I feel so offended.
I think this is the experience I got. I think the sad reality is that Blizzard hasn't been that for a long time.
No.
Like, yeah, I think probably their last big, very good launch was Overwatch, the first one. Like, that came out and blew the world away. And a year later, it wasn't the same game that was capturing people in the same way. You know what I mean? And since then, they just haven't, like, they have had, you know, Diablo 2 Resurrected, which didn't go down super well. Mm-hmm. Diablo Immortal, which didn't go down super well. The Warcraft expansions haven't been hitting really.
Yeah.
It's just the days of like, this is a Blizzard release, it's an event, are just gone. They're really just not there anymore. It's a bummer.
Yeah, it is a bummer because Overwatch 2 itself is fun. Like, I'll...
Like I said, I want to give it a go with you. I think I only played that game very briefly when it first launched, and you know, I'm not huge into competitive online games, so I bounced off of it very hard when it started getting very, very competitive. I was like,
very sweaty.
Yeah, very, very sweaty. But yeah, other than that, I do think it would be a good time to play with friends. So
yeah, and look, all criticisms, I mean, like, my biggest criticisms are just servers. I mean, I can't tell you, oh, this character's broken or this character doesn't feel right, whatever. Like, I think the game is obviously going to keep evolving because that's the nature of these, you know, online games. That you get balance patches and then it throws the balance out of whack, or things feel good, whatever. It'll constantly change. And the server problem, it's not going to be forever. Like, they'll fix it eventually. So yeah, like, I still think Overwatch is definitely worth playing. You know, I think just give it some time to sort all of that nonsense out. And it's on everything, just about, you know, free to play on PC,
that's a,
console.
That's a good point,
including Switch
yeah.
which is
Switch is a big one, I think.
I mean, it's free to play with some
I wonder how well it works on Switch. I'd love to, like, download it and give it a go.
I played Paladins on Switch for a little bit and I was shocked by how bad the game looks, but how well it runs. So I'd be surprised if Overwatch is a similar thing of it runs well, but it doesn't look as good, which makes complete sense. But yeah, so the free-to-play nature of the game means that there's a battle pass, and that is a whole discussion in itself of, you know, grinding up. If you're going to go the free-to-play route, you need to grind your way through heroes, or you can pay money up front.
Are you thinking that, based on your experience, is a bit grindy, or...
So the battle pass isn't too bad, right? Like, the limited time I've actually played, the handful of hours I've managed to play in my my extra hours of frustration, I think my battle pass is level 18 or 19. To get the new heroes, I think 50 or 55 is the, you know, the level to reach on the free to play battle pass. So it's definitely doable. If you play regularly, couple times a week, or even just once a week for a couple hours, like, you should be able to make your progress enough to unlock cool stuff through each season.
Okay.
But like I was telling you before we started recording, that it's quite weird that Overwatch 1 got, you know, it's one of those games that had loot boxes, and loot boxes are very predatory, or they can be very predatory depending on how they're executed. The sentiment I've seen is people saying they missed the loot boxes, which is such a weird thing. And I think it tells you how the store has been done in this game, that it feels very, very greedy.
I mean,
so
if,
like,
people
I was
are missing
you,
those loot boxes, because people did not like those loot boxes.
No, so like, but Battle Pass is fine. I have no issue with the Battle Pass. You cough up, I think it's 150, 180 rand, you get access to some cool cosmetics, whatever. But if you're just playing the game by default and you want to buy a legendary skin, the rate at which you earn currency in this game is so slow that you kind of like, well, might as well just put money in. Why would I grind out 2 to 3 months of weeklies, plus minus, when I can just pay? And I guess that's up for debate. Like, yeah, you know, the game's free to play, they have to make money somehow. But I've played many free-to-play games that don't feel this predatory. I don't know. It's a weird thing. And again, I feel offended because I used to love Blizzard. And not that I hate them. It's just like, this isn't the Blizzard I know.
Yeah.
You know, Overwatch 2 feels like a good game, but it's just wrapped in a poor launch and a weird cosmetic system, if that makes sense.
No, I get that. I get that. And, you know, as someone who is giving Overwatch 2 a chance, that would frustrate me. Hectically. So
that said, let's play.
I'm fucking down, man. I'm keen as a bean to give that a go. So
yeah.
Yeah. Sounds good. Well,
it's Overwatch 2.
It's Overwatch 2. Should we now move on to a gaming
games
and news?
Out.
Oh, games oh, out. Fuck, sorry.
It's like you haven't done this show for...
My bad.
For 203 episodes.
My bad.
The format's literally not changed. 203 episodes.
Don't attack me like this.
Cool. Game releases. Good Lord. Doesn't stop.
It does not stop.
Can't stop, won't stop. Where are we at? November. Oh, we're not November yet.
You're at November.
Still in October. What are we? October 15th to 21, I think.
Yeah, sounds right. I'm just getting there quickly.
Oh my God, this is a long list.
Yep, October 15th, which is today, up until October 21st. My goodness.
Nice.
My goodness. There's so many. It just keeps going. Okay, let's fly. Let's fly through this. FlatEye coming to PC October 17th. Terror of... I wanted to say Terror of Hermanus, but it's not that. Terror of...
It could
Hermasaurus.
Be.
Hermasaurus. Close enough. Listen.
Close enough.
Coming to PC October 17th. Nitro Kid. Is this Andy Cortez's game about
his
child?
Baby.
Like, what's going on here?
Not a raffle kid.
Yeah. October 18th. Emberial Dreams. I don't know what the word emberial means. Emberial.
Sounds like a made up word.
I probably Googled emberial and the first thing that came up was the game. So yeah, probably.
Made up word.
Yeah. It's coming to Steam Early Access October 18th. Big release for the week. A Plague Tale Requiem. PC, PS5, Xbox.
Oh,
I didn't realize this was not on older consoles. Wow.
Oh, okay. So yeah,
only new consoles and PC. Yeah, it is.
You can
also come into Game Pass.
You can preload it now. In fact,
yep.
It is a 47 gigabytes download.
47, at least 45 gigs of those are just rats.
Just so, rats.
Yeah,
just rats and their physics. Yeah,
I'm very keen for this. Having played the first one earlier this
likewise.
Year, so yeah.
Oh my god, this next game.
Them's Fighting Herds. This game has been around for a while. Why is it only out on... it's only out on consoles now. It's been at Evo a couple of times. So if you're not sure, this is a fighting game and a very good one at that, apparently, with the style of like My Little Pony.
What?
have you not seen them?
I've not seen this.
Them's Fighting Herds. Give it a quick Google. It is phenomenal. Just phenomenal looking game. And apparently very good as a fighting game.
I love this. I must play this. It is literally my little... you can play as a llama.
Yep. it's something, let me tell you. So, yeah, that's coming to consoles and Switch on October 18th. That's pretty cool. Marvel Snap. That is the Marvel card game, I think.
Nice.
PC, iOS, Android, October 18th. Crash Bandicoot 4, It's About Time, finally coming to PC on October 18th, along with that tease of a new reveal of a game at the Game Awards. So that's cool. Dead Link coming to Steam Early Access on October 18th. The Last Worker coming to PC October 18th. The Last Hero of Nostalgia.
Oh, these are completely
Nostalgia.
Unrelated.
Maybe. The Last Worker and
the Last
Hero.
Worker. Weird coincidence that they launch on the same day.
This one's coming to Xbox though, so PC, Xbox One, and Xbox Series X and S. So I assume this is a Game Pass game as well. October 19th, The Valiant coming to PC October 19th. Another big release for the week: Uncharted Legacy of Thieves Collection on PC. So that's
nice.
Uncharted 4 and Lost Legacy coming to PC. I don't think the original 3 are on PC.
Mm-mm.
If I'm not mistaken.
Also, I don't think so.
Yeah. So that's kind of strange.
I think
they would
give like the Nathan Drake collection a PC.
Yeah.
Port.
It's kind of a weird one to have number 4, the one that like kind of wraps up Nathan's story on PC. Anyway. This is a name.
Oh god.
Warhammer 4000, Shoot Us, Blood and Teeth. Shoot Us, Blood and... Is it teeth as in like a really bad
teeth.
Way to say teeth?
Because
it's T-E-E-F. Like, is the author having a... taking the piss here? Like, what's going on?
I have no idea.
It's coming to consoles. Oh, consoles and Switch.
It's another big one.
Oh, another big one. Oh my God, this week. Mario and Rabbids Sparks of Hope. So this is the sequel to that very XCOM-like game that...
Mm.
Actually, you know it came out the year the Switch released? It's been that long.
What?
Yeah.
Good Lord.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been a long time. Game was good. It was received very well. Very keen to get my hands on the sequel. Nice. Terracotta coming to PC and Switch October 20th. The Pegasus Expedition, Steam Early Access, October 20th. The Tenants... coming to PC October 20th. Batora, Lost Haven, coming to PC and consoles October 20th. Hell is Others. Don't know what the fuck that means. Oh, coming to PC October 20th. Another big one. Vampire Survivors goes 1.0 finally October 20th. This is your last chance to buy it at like a stupid $3, which is unbelievably cheap for such a great
game. Is that that Vampire... Battle Royale?
No. Or... Vampire Survivors is that like sort of idle game that...
Jeff is completely addicted to.
Darren's addicted to.
Okay, it's a good game. It.
Very good game. Mm. Park Story comes to PC and Xbox One October 20th. Second Extinction official launch. This is the sort of like Left 4 Dead with dinosaurs thing that's been in early access for a while. It's also on Game Pass, so PC, Xbox One.
God, what
Xbox
is this Series week?
Oh, I fucking had no idea Persona 5 Royal was out this week. PC, PlayStation 5. Goodbye. It is on PlayStation 5. What are they? I'm confused by that. Xbox Series X and Switch. It is on Game Pass as well.
100% play this game on Switch if it ran well.
Yes. I think, I'm pretty sure it will. This thing ran on a fucking PS3. So, yeah, I think it'll be fine.
Oh, yeah, you're right. It's like, what?
Yeah, no, this thing ran on PS3. Oh, maybe that's why it says PS5. I think it actually doesn't have a native PS5 version.
Okay,
because I was like, well, I can play it right now on PS5.
Also, what is this week?
That's, listen, that game fucking rules. Just be comfortable with 100 hours of your life being sucked away.
Just gone.
What a great game, though. Like, Matty, I think you, being a JRPG fan, would really like it.
I need to make the time.
Such good battle mechanics, such good... story and social mechanics. Really good.
Too good.
Another new big game, New Tales from the Borderlands, coming to PC, consoles, and Switch October 21st. And then even another one, Gotham Knights, coming to PC, PS5, Xbox Series X and S October 21st. What a fucking week, eh? Jesus.
There's a lot to choose from. Holy
just
shit.
Like, how do you... And then it doesn't stop the week after. The week after is Bayonetta, Resident Evil DLC, story DLC. Call of Duty Modern Warfare.
Good Lord.
Where's that drowning meme where you just like, you know, or that guy like sweeping water back into the ocean? That's what it feels like right now.
Love to see it.
That meme makes me laugh so much.
My goodness.
I remember while ago, I had a friend who was working at Take Lot, and during Black Friday, you know, their systems always shit the bed. And I messaged him and I was like, how's it going? And that's the meme he sent back to me. It's just like sweeping water back into the notion.
That's great.
You go, I was like, yep, totally understand what you mean.
Good Lord.
Good time.
Should we get to gaming news?
Gaming news. Let's go. Yeah. I've lost the link.
Don't you worry. I've got the link here. So... this week in gaming news,
what did you say we're going with? Oh yeah, Valve is making a new game.
Surprise!
Well,
Valve does make games. Apparently.
Either that, or they've called their new Steam Deck Neon Prime.
I mean,
one or the two. So I do like the opening here.
Headcrab botherers.
Yeah, in a Rock Paper Shotgun's article, headcrab botherers Valve registered a trademark for something called Neon Prime this week. An application filing is revealed. The application was made through United States Patent and Trademark Office. Neon Prime's trademark was listed as for computer game software, electronic game software, video game software, video game programs download via the internet. Wow, patents are so weird.
Yeah, you're going to be so specific.
So not VR or Steam Deck hardware. Interesting. So...
Half-Life 3 confirmed. I wish. God, I wish.
He goes on, the author CJ Wheeler here goes on to say, Somehow, I can't see this being Half-Life 3 Neon Prime. You never know.
Damn it.
Valve hasn't released a game since Aperture Desk Job for Steam Deck earlier this year. Before that, we got the VR spinoff of Half-Life Alyx in... Was that in 2020 already? Oh, my God. I don't know. Some people are suggesting this could be a new IP. I highly doubt that. Valve hasn't made a new IP since Portal, so...
Whatever, man. Aperture Desk Job. What is this?
Well, that's important.
I didn't even know that was a thing.
That's the sort of 30-minute demo on the Steam Deck. Yeah. It's really not that excessive. It's literally just a 30-minute demo.
Nice.
So,
well, I guess we'll see at some stage. I don't know. Valve makes good games when they're not making hats and just making... $1 trillion off their own storefronts.
Yes.
So I'd really love to see them, you know, dip their toes into making actual narrative games again.
It would be cool.
The last thing they made was, what is that Dota 2 card game? Oof, that was not good.
Oh, Artifact, wasn't it?
Artifact,
I think that was called Artifact, yeah.
It's dead. Weirdly, it just didn't survive. I thought that game would have survived because it's Dota.
Yeah,
I guess let's wait and see what Valve has planned.
I'm keen for something new from Valve. I kind of hope it is. I mean, Neon Prime could be the code name for a new Half-Life thing. It doesn't mean it's called Neon Prime. You know what I mean? So
yeah, for sure.
I listen. They said they're going to be doing more Half-Life stuff because Alyx really popped off. So. I could see it too.
What news do you want to pivot to? How do you follow? I suppose, speaking of VR, just talk about this quickly. Meta Quest Pro announced costs 3 PS5s. It's expensive.
I don't understand.
Facebook has officially launched Meta Quest Pro, the more expensive sibling to the Meta Quest 2. Formerly known as Oculus Quest 2, and released the full list of specs for the device. Meta Quest Pro will cost you $1,500 and will ship starting October 25th.
It's an impressive headset. Like, there is some shit in there that is genuinely, like, cutting edge for VR, but... And I guess to an extent, Meta made this very clear in their conference. This is not a consumer device. This is not meant for...
Yeah.
You know, you can absolutely purchase it and just play games in it, but that's not what it's priced for. That's not what it's designed for. It's designed for workplace VR and workplace metaverse stuff, which again, I'm just like, if your idea is mass adoption of devices so that you can push this idea of the metaverse, surely you price it in a way that most people are going to buy it then. Like, what workspace on earth looks at this and goes, yeah, shit, that's a deal.
You can spend $1,500 and get this.
Love it. That's exactly what I want instead of a monitor.
Oh, my God.
I don't understand who this is for. I genuinely do not understand.
It's just coming out. You can play Beat Saber with the...
In AR, which is pretty cool. So you don't need to have the whole futuristic thing. You can just see your cat staring at you while you wave your arms like a maniac.
Well,
or you can spy on your neighbor watching you while you wave your arms like a maniac.
What I will say is that I'm glad. So I haven't invested in a VR device myself, not yet.
Mm-hmm.
I am glad that VR is clearly here to stay. Like, I think when VR sort of reared its head a few years ago, there was some question marks on, like, we've seen VR in the past, it didn't stick.
Mm.
Now we've got PSVR 2 around the corner. We've got this year. We've got other devices just being made, so that's cool.
I think VR is still here. I think VR has definitely solidified itself as, you know, the I think the idea was people are like, VR has to replace traditional gaming for it to be a success, and it's like, that's super not what it's going to do. But it's successfully complemented it, like you've said. I think it's definitely here to stay. I think PSVR 2 is going to be a banger. I'm very excited.
I also hope so.
I mean, PSVR 2 launches the Half-Life Alyx. That is a 100% day one purchase for a lot of people. And
good Lord.
As it should be, because that game is incredible. So,
Well, what news do you want to pivot off to? What do you want to talk about?
This NVIDIA stuff, this is so weird. I've never in my life seen something like this. So
what is happening?
You'll recall that NVIDIA announced 3 GPUs last month, the RTX 4090, which just launched this week, and then 2 RTX 4080s, the 16 gigabyte version and the 12 gigabyte version. Now, NVIDIA got a lot of flack after the announcement because at first it seemed like the difference was just the amount of VRAM that you're getting in the card. But when people actually got access to the full specs, the cards are not the same, like not even close. So you're getting fewer CUDA cores, you're getting a narrower memory interface, so you're getting much lower memory bandwidth overall. You're getting far fewer transistors in the card. So it's not just a memory, you know, deficit. It's like a performance. Though, like to the point where in NVIDIA's graphs, there were instances where the 16 gig card was outperforming the 12 gigabyte card by 30%. And yet they're both 4080s. So, you know, NVIDIA at the time were like, oh no, we still want to call this a 4080 because we believe its performance is in the 4080 class. And that is a fucking strange way to think about something. You're like, what does that mean? That's all relative. Yeah. You know what I mean? So it seems like the flak didn't let up and they have indefinitely delayed this card. As in, they put out a statement saying they are unlaunching it, which is bizarre. So the 16 gigabyte card is still coming in November. This 12 gigabyte card is just not coming. Like, maybe it will be rebranded as a 4070 and released later down the line.
Yeah. But
this thing is straight, which now makes the baseline price of a new 40 series card much higher because this 12 gigabyte version was $900 MSRP. The 16 gigabyte is $1,200. So $300 more or 33% more. So yeah, you cannot buy a new 40 series card for lower than $1,200 this time around, which is, I think, the highest, which was the highest price for their highest card last generation, the 3090, if I'm not mistaken. So, I mean, the 4090, based on reviews, seems like a phenomenal card, like so phenomenal in fact that it is actually useless to buy if you do not have like a 4K display, because it, in some cases, it is actually even hitting CPU limits on 4K displays. So on a 1440p one, you might not even see a difference to your game if you are already running at like games at like 120, because it's just going to hit a CPU limit and you will actually be wasting the performance of this, you know, locally priced 35,000, 40,000 rand. Yeah, it 100% makes sense now why NVIDIA priced it like this. Because if they priced it any lower, the 30 series cards would just never sell. There is absolutely zero reason to purchase one. Now, if you can get a 3080 Ti for $600, $700, a third of the price of a 4090, and you've got a 1440p screen, that makes tons more sense because you're getting the performance you need at you know, the hardware level you have, and it costs a third of what you're paying for a, you know, it's 40K for a 4090. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. You suck.
So, I would, honestly, I mean, most reviewers echoed this, like Digital Foundry and whatever. They're like, be very sure that you actually need this level of performance because there's seriously very few people in the world who require this. You know, aside from the people who just have a lot of money and want to be on the cutting edge just because. So I think if you've got a 3070, 3080, 3090, you're probably good. You're honestly probably good.
For a while, at least.
For a while. I think probably even until the next gen. For the next 2 years, you'll probably be playing things above 60, no problem up until then. So
you could play games like Marvel Spider-Man Miles Morales coming to PC November 18. What a segue. Yes, I should get paid for this.
Should get paid triple.
Look at this. So we... So we played Spider-Man Remastered a couple months ago on PC. It looks so good.
Very good.
Now, Miles Morales, arguably better looking game just because, you know, Miles has also access to different abilities. Yeah, better game in general. It's a different aesthetic. It's Christmas time. Miles
so much neon lighting.
Some, super flashy abilities, it's going to look real pretty on PC. So
I'm very, very keen to play this on PC. I'm also hoping now that there's been enough time between Remastered and this one that they've addressed some of the issues in Remastered.
I was thinking that as well.
Specifically just the issues with CPU performance. Like the game is like really, really CPU bound to the point where I've got a pretty decent CPU and that thing was not allowing me to run like a solid 60 even. And it's the CPU. So Digital Foundry has noted that it is like there's some heavy CPU usage here. So yeah, I hope they've ironed that out a little bit.
If you want ultimate ray tracing 4K at 60 FPS, you're just going to need a casual 3080 or a AMD RX 6950. We're along with an i7 12700.
Jesus.
12700.
That's a huge
all the Ryzen 9 5900. But you know, that's ultimate ray tracing.
Guess
you
I'm know, not doing ultimate ray tracing. Oh, but that's ultimate. At 4K as well.
That's at 4K.
Okay, yeah, okay. No, that's a bit extreme.
That's crazy. A bit extreme. Yeah, this game's coming out. I'm very keen to dabble with this on PC.
Just want to get that good Bodega Cats in my backpack.
Of course, look at this.
I've realized after owning cats that Bodega Cat is a lie. As soon as the Spider-Man starts swinging, that cat would yeet itself out of the backpack.
Yeah, out of the bag, 100%.
Yeah.
Really would. Cool.
Let's see what's next.
Could bounce to.
Should we quickly chat about this Modern Warfare thing?
Yes.
So, I don't know if it's actually a requirement for people here locally, because I know.
I think it was.
Yeah, new players to Overwatch were required, or Overwatch 2 were required to use a SMS text message verification process. That essentially meant like you needed to have a cell phone number attributed to the account you were using for, I don't know, security purposes so that you can create stupid Smurf accounts or whatever. So initially it was reported that the same would be happening for Modern Warfare 2, despite the requirement being dropped for Overwatch 2 after there was a lot of flack because people were like, well, on prepaid numbers, especially in the States, they can't use the service, which is real, you know, classism in a way. Not everyone wants to be tied to a contract, which I agree with. Like, that's kind of fucking ridiculous. But so it was initially reported that this was the same for Modern Warfare 2, that it would have this entire system. It's not really true. This system has kind of always been there for Modern Warfare 2. Back to like Warzone in May 2020, as Polygon notes here in this article. It also is only a requirement for PC players. So it's not the same.
Okay.
It's not the same, is what I'm saying. Yeah. Like if you're playing Call of Duty on consoles, you don't have to worry about this. If you're playing on PC, this is something you've been dealing with for the past 2 years already. So it is what it is. That's all I have to say about that.
A latest Elden Ring patch suggests visual improvements and DLC maps coming. I love this. The Lands Beyond. What a strapline. I don't know if you've looked at the patch notes. I've skimmed through them. I think the most significant thing is that they're separating how PvE and PvP weapons are balanced. How the two work, essentially. Spells and weapons and all of that will be balanced differently across the two, which is really nice because if you want to have a broken-ass build in single player, I don't know why you should be punished in PvP. Like, you should be able to separate the two, if that makes sense. You know this. You use the Rivers of Blood katana because it's a real good weapon. If you rocked up in PvP with that, people will shit all over you saying, how dare you use this weapon here in PvP?
Yeah.
I don't know. But what's the most exciting part of this patch is that it looks like the DLC is there.
It's underway.
It's happening.
There are plans being cooked up. Yeah. Two new maps sounds pretty much what I would expect from a DLC.
Yeah.
Yeah. That sounds quite in line.
Quite keen to see what they have planned, because this game, chef's kiss.
Oh, yeah.
Really excited to play just more of it.
Oh, yeah. I'd be keen to see. I mean, if this... So apparently, you know, this patch also alludes to ray tracing. That was... From Software actually said that they were doing that before the game came out. It was just a matter of when. I'm curious. I suspect this will only be on PC, though. I just don't... The level of performance it is on console, I just don't see it happening.
They could maybe get away with it if you lock to 30 FPS, but wow.
I mean, they already have a mode that locks to 30 at 4K. I just... I also just wouldn't play it at 30. So,
no.
Like, if the ray tracing's at 30, it's like, well, that's nice. I will just turn that on to look at it for a bit and be like, cute. Like, and then turn it back. Yeah, exactly. There's no way I'm compromising that smoothness just for ray tracing, unfortunately. Same. Game looks fucking great already, so I don't think it's a huge
issue. It really does.
Yeah.
And then last pieces of news. Fans think Phil Spencer's shelf is teasing the Xbox Game Pass streaming box.
Yeah.
This was the original article, but update, Xbox confirms old Keystone prototype.
Yeah, so, you know, as has become tradition with Phil Spencer now, you just put shit on his shelf and people scope it out and they're like, oh, that's new.
Like, oh my God, I can't believe this.
So, yeah, the most recent was, I think it was for, he was talking about, like, Fallout hitting a 25-year anniversary. People noticed the small little white rectangle on the top of his shelf that almost looked like a baby Xbox One. And turns out that's an old prototype for Xbox Keystone, which was essentially, for all intents and purposes, a streaming stick that you connected to a display that hooked you up to Xbox Cloud Gaming.
xCloud,
But in May earlier this year, as noted here by Eurogamer, Xbox confirmed it was pivoting away from the streaming box. And I think that's because they've realized they can just as easily develop apps for specific devices. They've already got a Xbox Cloud Gaming app on Samsung TVs.
Samsung, yeah.
So, yeah, it's that makes more sense to me.
Yeah, it's clever. You completely mitigate the hardware investments.
Exactly.
You still get like the same results.
You just sell a controller and the controller's all Bluetooth and they hook up to the TV and that's that. So,
it's too good. And then last news this, well, piece of news this week, John Carpenter would still like to make a Dead Space film.
I'd be fucking
acclaimed director says it would make a real great movie.
I'd be fucking keen. I'd be so keen. I mean, the director and creator of Halloween and The Thing making a Dead Space. Yeah, fucking sign me up. Even if he just did a score, like if he composed the score for it, like I'd be super keen. So
see, we say this, but video game movies traditionally not good.
Also
but
true.
I'd be keen to see.
Also true.
A Dead Space game movie.
I mean, Dead Space was in a way inspired by John Carpenter's The Thing. So I think it would be a good choice. Dead Space is one of those like video game movies that could actually be like really really good because like horror games are to an extent. Like you know, they're perfectly paced for films. So you can do a lot of things beat for beat. I say this, but we got a really terrible Doom film not so long ago. So, well, quite a long while ago now.
Well, but I mean, Doom, modern day Doom is not a horror game. I think those...
But they based it off of Doom sequels. 3, which was a horror game. So
yeah, Doom 3 was like a hardcore sequel. But then it's funny because they gave that... quote unquote horror game like the Doom 2016 treatment.
That movie is fucking terrible.
And game is just
with
pathetic,
a really good cast, like Dwayne Johnson, Carl Urban, Rosamund Pike, like how did that happen? Like it's real bad. It's got a real cool scene though where it changes to first person. It's real stupid. I love it.
It's dumb, but you're like, oh man, that's like playing a game.
Yeah. When they pull out the BFG, it's a great time. Love it.
It's good. It's too good. But yeah, so John Carpenter making a Dead Space film, I'd watch that.
Oh yeah, hell yeah. 100%. I would. Yeah. It just reminds me that the third Halloween movie is out, I think, this week. And apparently it's not good again, which fucking sucks because that reboot was so good and then they fucked it up with these two sequels.
I hate to see it.
Yeah, really, really depressing. Well,
that is gaming news for this week.
That means we are moving on to gaming questions. If you want to send us a question, you can email us, checkpointchatpodcast@gmail.com. You can also find us on all our social platforms at Checkpoint Chat. What is on the docket today, Matthew Figuera?
Let me just pull open Instagram quickly. We have... Sorry, what is going on here? What the hell is up with my Instagram? We have a comment from one Caption Barbosa.
Mm.
He says, why are you like this? So rude.
An important question.
Really rude, this guy. A real important question, but one I'm not at liberty to answer. Ever.
I can tell you that I am like this because I woke up like this.
Wow. But on to actual questions. We have a couple on the docket. So let's start with at Jared Brapra on Twitter, who asks, oh, hey guys, hope you're going to be having a treat weekend. Can you guys think of any other publisher / developer bouncing back from a bad launch, not seeing that CD Projekt Red has an ambitious roadmap ahead?
Capcom.
Who?
Capcom.
Capcom. Yeah,
Capcom bounced back from several disastrous launches in quick succession. Yeah,
Capcom. Capcom today should not exist.
It shouldn't. It really shouldn't.
Call it that. I think that started, was it Resident Evil 7 that kicked off that revitalization, or what was it?
Yeah, sort of. It was a bit of Monster Hunter World.
You're right.
It was the string of Resident Evil 6, which for all intents and purposes killed the series. Like, it was dead. Street Fighter 5, dead. Mm. I'm trying to think of that other one. What was it? I don't know. They just made really bad bets on, like, this is the future of games, like heavy monetization, heavy live service-y. Yeah. Like, you know, they did like Operation Raccoon City, the multiplayer Resident Evil one. Mm. Like, also there was about three or four years, probably more, where everything Capcom put out just looked like a joke. Like, people had completely lost faith in Capcom. And then Monster Hunter World came out, banger. Like, absolutely huge game for them. First Monster Hunter to really capture, like, the Western audience. Resident Evil 7 came out. I mean, we saw that at E3, and they were like, it's out in Jan. I was like, good luck.
That's cool. Ludicrous. 6 months away.
Everyone was like, oh, Resident Evil's dead. Remember the last one, blah, blah, blah. Game was a banger. Didn't sell extremely well out of the gate, but, like, huge, huge critical reception. Mm. Then you had the Resident Evil remakes, which were massive. Mm. The continued expansion of Monster Hunter World. Now you've got like Street Fighter 6. Every time Capcom announces something, you're paying attention. Like you're looking at it going, this is going to be good. And this all happened, like the fall and rise of them happened in the space of like a decade, which is really impressive. So I can't think of another big publisher that has gone through that sort of wave in recent memory. So, because EA is just kind of like declined. Activision's definitely declined.
I think it's not quite the same, but I think it's definitely not the same. But Ubisoft often, they went through a phase where their game launches were just average and then games just got better with time.
That's still the case, I think, yeah.
Yeah. Where like Rainbow Six Siege, I think, is a good example. Yep. It launched, people like, eh. It's okay. And then now it's one of the biggest shoots.
It hits a stride in like it's like third or fourth year. Because they just consistently supported it. The same is happening now. I've since read up about it, but Brawlhalla, same thing.
Oh yeah.
It's become huge in the FGC.
Maybe that's why we got South African service.
Well, that's what I was told by friend of the show, Omar. Like when I joked about it on Twitter, he's like, no, the FGC is huge into this game now. Like, sure. They are loving it ever since it went free to play. For Honor, I don't think is there anymore, but For Honor had like a not great launch and then peaked up again very, very well. Like Ubisoft has this good knack of like giving their games long tails. They just need to figure out how to establish that momentum at launch. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think just on a smaller scale, the other example that comes to mind is No Man's Sky.
Definitely.
I think that's the hero story we all love to see where, because you never want to see a studio flop.
No, like, absolutely
I can't
not.
Look in the eye and go like, I hope the studio burns.
No, never.
But yeah, that was a game that was hyped way too high. Yeah. Launched, people just did not dig it. And look at it today. It's just year after year, big patch after big patch, and it's got a huge player base now. So good on that studio.
It's a real feel good story for that studio. It's really, really cool that they managed to pull that back in the way they did.
Cool. We have a question. Where did my window go? Here we go. We have a question from Good Pal Gary Dunn, who asks, what's your guilty pleasure game that we won't expect you to love that isn't enjoyed as much by the vast community?
That isn't enjoyed
guilty
by
pleasure
the
game.
Vast community.
It's a game you can play that I suppose not many people would play or expect you to play. I don't know. I feel like mine are so obvious.
Like what?
What's my... No, I mean, it's not something that you wouldn't expect me to like. Like, I dip my toe back into Celeste every now and then. I've played a lot of Elden Ring still. Every once in a blue moon, I go back to Dota 2 and Counter-Strike.
How dare you?
But I don't know if I've... I only play good games. I don't play rubbish games. I don't know of any games. At least
I wouldn't. I wouldn't say that, but... I mean,
I dare you.
I wouldn't, but that's just me.
How dare you? Do you have any guilty pleasure games?
Trying to think of some guilty pleasures.
Actually, a tough question, yeah.
No, that are like not fantastic, but I still enjoy playing them.
I can't think
off the top of my head, really.
No.
I dip into Splatoon whenever I can, but lately that's not been a great time because of the server issues. So that's been a bit of a depressing,
so
habit.
Upsetting.
Yeah. I play chess a lot, so I don't.
Oh
know,
no!
Do you have a phone? Yeah, I play chess.
Do you play on chess.com? What's your rating?
Oh, it's
you
not
play
good.
Ranked?
I think it's like 500. It's not great.
I don't know what a good rating is. So you could say 500. 500
like,
quite low. 500, amazing.
I think Magnus Carlsen, who's the world number one, is like, I think he's just 3,000 or over 3,000 now. It's very far. Because you only get like 15 points per win and you lose, I think, 8 per loss. So, to get up to that point, that's... I play a lot at work and there's a couple of guys that... Well, there's a guy at work who's like over 1,000. So being over 1,000 as just a standard player is like really good. Like you are already way better than most
people. So you're playing on your phone?
Yeah.
That's cool.
It's an app on the phone, yeah.
Nice. I must get that.
Yeah, when you play more and more, you realize how much better you get so quickly. So,
there you learn. Cool. And then we have one last question on email. Let me just find it quickly. It was actually sent earlier this week. Did I answer? No, this is 3 days ago. Okay, just checking. From Good Paul Malesh, who says, good day, mates. I have a question about review embargoes. I understand why they exist. The part I don't understand is why the embargo date is also sometimes embargoed. Why would a publisher obscure the date or time review will drop? Most recently, Arkham Knights. And he follows with an email saying, and yes, I realized I had the game name incorrect after I had sent. He means Gotham Knights. I don't know. It's. I suppose there are reasons behind it, but...
I think the reason is literally to obscure if the review date is happening like on release day. That's the only reason I can think of.
Yeah. Generally a red flag.
Exactly.
Not always. Yeah.
Bethesda certainly bucked that trend. The thing is now it's really easy to get around that because OpenCritic, which is like a competitor to Metacritic, they often get people anonymously divulging the date. Yeah. So they almost, I think, I can't recall the last time a big game didn't have like the accurate countdown to the review embargo on that site. And that's almost impossible to stop. Like they,
yeah.
And also it's a date, you know, publishers are more concerned with people breaking the actual embargo than releasing when the embargo is going to drop. I don't know.
But even on that, like we mentioned it earlier in the show, you reviewed Scorn, which had an embargo of midday on the day of the game's release, which is, I can't understand any strategic purpose for that other than
to hide the scores.
I mean, it just makes no sense because by that point, people will have purchased the game.
Yeah.
The point of reviews, well, like in the perfect world, a review should come out a few days before game launches to give consumers, you know, an idea of what the game is like. You know, how did it review? Is it good or bad? Whatever. Then they can go, okay, this sounds like my jam. I'll put the money down.
Yeah.
But yeah, it happens that some reviews are on the day of the game, which again, generally it's a red flag, not always. I mean, I think a recent example, someone at my office, because we actually spoke about this week, weirdly enough, at the office, somebody mentioned like Kena Bridge of Spirits was the embargo, I think it was the day of launch. And remember when that game was coming out, we were like, it looks good, but
there hasn't been
gameplay. The reviews are dropping on the day of launch. Shit, this game's going to be bad. And pleasantly, surprisingly enough, it was really good. So
I can't tell you one way or another why it's done like that. When I think it comes down to faith, like, you know, are the developers or are the publishers, do they have faith that the game's going to review well? And sometimes they get it wrong. You know, because they do. I don't know if this like is common knowledge, but publishers commission like mock reviews of their games like pretty regularly. Before a game is launching, they will hire people, usually former games writers or, you know, other industry veterans, to play the game and conduct a review and submit it as if it was going to be submitted to a website, because that gives them an indication of what to expect. And maybe sometimes those are just way off because, hey, things are so subjective. And so they maybe delay the embargo and they're like, oof, we really need to hide this, you know, because they're defending business interests at that time. And then sometimes it completely is just the opposite. And then you get Bethesda, who don't give a shit. They're just like, this is our review policy. You get the game at launch. I think they've loosened up on that recently, but it used to be, I know with Doom 2016, that was the first game that went according to that. They're like, reviewers are only getting this at launch. People like, huge red flag. This is like, this game is going to be shit. And it ended up being like one of the best shooters of really the past decade. Yeah. So I don't know. It's strange. Embargoes themselves, I'm sure, as Milesh said, he's aware, is mainly just to allow everyone on fair footing and to prevent people from rushing through the game to get it out first. You know, sometimes publishers aren't friendly enough to that, they will give you a game and be like, embargoes in 2 days, and that just creates the problem that they're trying like, to avoid. Because people will rush because they see embargo as the be all and end all, and then they'll rush through a game and not give it a fair shake. So
because I mean the trade-off is that you're getting the numbers, you know, you're launching your review, you're dropping a review on embargo, you're gonna get clicks.
As much as people say it's not important, it's not important for the big sites. They can afford not to do that. Smaller sites, that is the be-all and end-all, especially if a big site is not going to publish. Like, so it creates a shitty demand that...
When we see it with some of our videos. I mean, the videos that we publish, you know, if it's a game that's... If we have review for a game that launches like a day or two after the embargo, those videos do good numbers because
we're
meeting
the
embargo and... Yeah. Whereas if we publish stuff after the fact, we get lost like in the huge sea of content.
Yeah. And then you get some cases where that isn't the case. Like you publish far enough away from the initial discourse that it gets almost like a second wind gets picked up again.
Yeah.
But that's much harder to time. But at the same time, it's also easy enough to get lost in a sea of like Call of Duty.
It launched us.
Put it that. Call of Duty. There's no way a review of ours will do well because the sea of reviews for a game like that would be immense. Too big. The big games, you just get lost. So it doesn't matter. The embargo is like inconsequential.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there we go. That is all the questions for today. It's a nice variation there. Yo. Thank you.
Thank you so much for sending questions. If you'd like to send questions for next time, checkpointchatpodcast@gmail.com or checkpointchat on all of our social platforms.
All of the places.
All of the places. That's been episode 203 of Checkpoint Chat.
One of our longer ones.
Yeah, one of the longer ones. Yeah, we had a lot of games to talk about, and that's probably going to be a theme for the next couple of weeks. So
I know.
Yeah. As always, thank you so much for listening. We appreciate all of the support, and we will be back next week. Until then, goodbye.
Goodbye.